We are a weekly podcast, Soul of a Gamer.
Hey, I'm smart this time. Well, I did not, this
let's
time.
Let's not go that far, okay?
I will fuck it up again.
I love pressing that button. That was my favorite button.
That's definitely.
This game gets really fucking weird.
So you do acid and then you go into the hamster shit.
And this week is
Night Trap.
Night Trap.
They're right behind you, Night Trap.
10-year-old birthday party. Next scene, kill the kid.
You got to kill the kid. Sha la 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 la, car is coming. Throw your body into the car and die. All I could do every time I was playing Ethan was just would start walking around and go, Jason!
Oh, God. It's just...
A bipedal podcast, huh? What's that mean?
Yes, there are two pedals.
Oh,
but only one
go, one
rider.
Oh, is it like a bicycle?
It's a bipedal.
Oh, yeah. Two pedals. Okay.
Two pedals.
Yeah.
One go fast.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's what this is.
All right. So we should go fast then.
No. Well, you're not near now. You're not even a pedal. You're like a.
Oh,
I believe you're.
I'm like the horn that, or something.
No. You're that thing that we used to put on the back of our bike so people could stand on the wheel.
The pegs?
Yeah, the little pegs in the back.
You just want me to peg you.
No. You are the peg.
Oh, I am
you
one of the
You get inserted into people's buttholes.
Sure. I'll go with that. Watch
Welcome
out,
back,
people.
Everybody.
I get inserted into buttholes.
Why? Peg, which gets inserted into your butthole.
You know, at least it's smooth on top going in.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about, until it gets to his beard. You don't have to worry about any scratchiness.
All right, that
I'm
was
Scott.
Weird. I'm Steven.
And every week we are Soul of a Gamer podcast. Every week we tell
we
you about
that.
A game we play. We give you a background to the making of the game, and we tell you our review of the game.
Yes.
We hope you enjoyed our last week's episode.
Don't even ask me, dude. And it was a hot takes thing.
Oh, was it a hot takes? I thought we did first.
I can't remember, dude. I can't remember the order.
It takes two, I thought.
Sorry again for everybody if our episodes have been a little sporadic. I know missed a week or two here and there. I've been moving, like I was saying one of the last times. I am now officially in Wyoming. So there's nothing around
That's
here.
Hilarious, guys. He said, if you could see his camera right now, he set up this whole like big fucking nerd setup behind him before he set up his fucking computer like an idiot.
Yeah. That happened. You know, I had to deal with a lot of extra shit that I wasn't expecting to, like buying a new car. Because as soon as my wife's car gets transported over here, the check engine light comes on. They're like, oh, yeah, your engine's shot. It's going to die at any point. So don't ever drive it outside of the city. And then my brother and sister-in-law are like, hey, come visit us for our birthday and hang out with friends. And we're like, oh, it would be kind of cool to see people from Colorado,
be
I guess.
Great, but we don't have a car.
We should. And so just mad rush to try to get a car and found a perfect car. And it worked out really well. So, I mean, fingers crossed everything's still... We drove it over 1,000 miles this week. And it's been perfect so far. So I'm happy with this.
Nice. And it has the dildo inserts, guys.
Dude, you're just like
those
rocky roads. Oh my god!
Have you ever watched Always Sunny? There's a great episode where where Mac makes a exercise bike.
Oh,
he has a dildo that goes up, and it's like to inspire you not to sit down, to try your hardest. And they, he's
so every
like,
time you sit down, you're like,
there's nothing gay about that. That's inspiration. And
I
then
mean,
by the end of the episode, he admits he's gay.
I mean, you're trying not to get it in your asshole. He's got a valid point that it could mean you're not gay.
yeah, but that's not what he was.
But I mean, he is definitely gay, so that makes
yeah. All right. Well, tell me what you've been playing, Steven.
Ah, yes. The fuck I've been playing this week. I have been actually. I gave Jedi Fallen Order one more time.
I like how you said it like that. The fuck I've been playing this week? Because I normally say, what the fuck have you been playing?
I know, I missed it. So I had to say, throw it in there. I had to throw it. But yeah, I gave Jedi Fallen Order another try.
I need to go in and actually play those games too.
Yeah, like I hated it the first time I played it because I was like, this doesn't feel like Star Wars. It doesn't feel like Dark Souls. Everyone was calling it a Souls-like. I think that's the biggest misrepresentation of this game by far.
And I would 100% agree, because honestly, when I played the little bit that I did, it did not feel like a Souls-like game.
No, you know what it feels like? It feels like Tomb Raider. It feels like Uncharted. It feels like an action-adventure game with collectibles. And it also kind of feels like a Metroidvania, like Ori and the Blind Forest, because you go to a section of the map, you can't progress any further. You see all this stuff that you can't get to because you don't have the traversal effects to do it yet. You go to a next area, you get that traversal effect, you go back to that area, and then you're like, oh, there's more to discover now. And then you go to a next area and get another traversal, and then you have to go back to that area again. So you go to each planet like three or four times throughout this game.
Yeah.
It feels exactly like an action-adventure Metroidvania. Like, I was like, this is not a Souls-like. And even the Souls-like aspect of it, you don't even lose all your experience. Like, yeah, you can reset the enemies at your meditation point.
Yeah.
But they even took away the fast travel between meditation points, which I'm like, fuck you. You're making me run this map back and forth. And this is, like, a very linear maps. So sometimes, like, to get to the very end of the map, you, like, it takes you, like, 10 minutes. And I'm like, fuck off, dude. Why did you make me walk this like six times? Because every time I have to go further into the map and you make it further and further away. And they add some shortcuts here and there. But I'm like, just fast travel. Why does this game not have fast travel? But yeah.
I mean, I feel like every game should always have fast travel.
Every game. Yeah.
Especially if you're going to do like these big open maps that everyone wants to do now, you need a fucking fast travel system, some kind.
At least have it unlockable at some point. It doesn't necessarily need to be that right away. Like halfway through the game, maybe it'd be fine, honestly.
At the latest halfway through.
Yes.
If you fucking do it any later than that, fuck you.
Yes. But even then, like at least like late game, if you're trying to find all the collectibles, like even if you make it, you can't do it till the end of the game. As soon as I beat the last boss, make it accessible. Like, make it so when I'm going to try to get all the achievements, I can just fast travel to points. Like, that's where it's helpful for the gamers.
Yeah. All right.
But yeah. It's not too bad, though. But yeah, what do you
play? I have been continuing to play Dragon Age. I've gotten through all the DLC for Dragon Age 2, the DLC for Dragon Age 1. I beat Dragon Age 2. God, it was so much fucking easier than the last time I played it, man.
Nice.
Remember when I was telling you the story about how I was a rogue and I just didn't know how to
build it.
You
hated it because it was like glass cannon or something?
Yeah, like a glass cannon, but only when it didn't matter. Like, you would destroy the smaller enemies, but for some reason bosses had like this extra layer of fucking shit and you wouldn't do shit to them.
Oh, okay.
And I decided to go two-handed swordsman on this one, and I told you the story where I was playing, and I was playing as a rogue, and I defeated the Arashok, who's the bad guy from Act 2, and he's really fucking hard to fight, and you have to fight him that way, otherwise you lose one of your crew members, and it's like, it was one of the most annoying things in the world, and I beat him, and then my game crashes, like, during a forced right after. And I had to go back because there's no save point between fucking cutscenes. But this time, it was just so easy. I fucked him up as a two-handed swordsman. I had no trouble. And like the first time, I just decided to put it on easy and then beat him that way and then put it back on normal. Because I beat him on normal, it just took me forever to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. And this time, I got way more into like making shit in the game. I made these cool grenades that were really helpful. Leveled up my guy really high. Like, I had a lot of fun with it. It was a really cool experience going back and playing it as a two-handed swordsman, and I'm gonna do the same thing in the next game, I think, Dragon Age Inquisition.
I always love that, going back to old games and then like you'll play a totally different style than you played before and you realize like that's the style that fits you the best. Like, you thought like this archer class or something would be the best, and then you play this other class and you're like, nope, this is exactly my style. Everything vibes with it. Everything hits hard. You go through the story quicker.
So they really made all the classes kind of OP in the game. Even the rogue, like, if you build him right, you will be fine. And building him right takes into, like, building poisons for him and stuff, which I never did in the past.
Yeah.
Because that's all extra layered shit that's really hard to go through. But
I mean,
this
time
I went really into the crafting side of it, and it's so much better than the first game when it comes to crafting.
Nice. Yeah, depending on a lot of the RPGs, and we'll talk about it in our RPG that we're talking about for this episode later too, but the more complex it is, or the more things they have, like, the more it is, like, the more time you take into learning how it all works or how it all connects, the more you, like, fixate your builds to like these like fine tuned levels, the more you can just do like the most insane shit ever. And you're just like, God damn it. I took like 30 minutes to learn how to do this. And now I could do three times the damage I was doing. Like, what the fuck?
But
like,
the problem with that, it's a dual edged sword, you know, because then if you make it too complicated, people won't want to do it.
Oh, 100%. I agree with that.
So you've got to make it A, approachable, and B, like, worth it.
Yeah.
The end result has to be worth it. Because if it's just like you do 20 more damage, you're not going to want to do all the fucking work for 20 more damage.
That's for sure. For sure.
Complexity and the end result are both like intertwined.
Yeah. All right. So I guess are we ready to give us the backstory of our game and announce what we're doing this week?
Yes, we are playing Expedition 33. It's technically Clair Obscur Expedition 33. I was super pissed about the title until I read something that said, like, you know, we chose Clair Obscur because we weren't just making a game, this one-time game. We're actually hoping to make a franchise.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, okay, now I'm getting it. Clair Obscur is like the world, and Expedition 33 is the current title we are in.
Well, and Clair Obscur is also something in like art that means like the contrast of light and dark.
Yeah, yeah, I've got it all in here.
Yeah, I'm like, it's such a cool thing, but like the whole thing, like, I kept on calling it Expedition 33 every time I was talking about it to my wife. Like, that's what I ended up calling it. But whatever you call it, Clair Expedition or just Expedition 33, like, or Clair.
Honestly,
Obscur,
the
like,
most accurate would be Expedition 33 because that is this game. And
true.
They're going to come
true.
Out with other Clair Obscur games. There is no doubt in my mind.
Oh yeah, I hope they do. I hope we get a group number Expedition 60. That was the naked bodybuilder group, I think.
Probably. I don't know. I'd honestly rather hear more about the writer and the artist war.
Oh, that's true too.
You know, honestly,
that'd be cool.
That could be a cool game in the outer world, because the inner world is what we're in right now, but we'll get into all that.
Okay.
I didn't really write a synopsis for this game. Just know that it's an RPG open world. Anything you say about it is going to give away a lot about the game.
I know.
Like, and that's the rough part for this one. And I didn't want to write it for that reason. I'm like, shit. Like, I could say this one thing, but then you're all going to know this big fucking thing. And this is going to be a spoilers, guys. There's going to be some in here. So just be warned.
Yeah, there is going to be minor spoilers throughout this entire podcast, so do be warned. We are going to try to stick away from as like major spoilers, but there will be minor things, especially like early game stuff is going to be talked about mainly the most, so be warned.
Yeah. All right. In a gaming world dominated by fast-paced shooters and sprawling open worlds, one game quietly emerged with a different rhythm, a turn-based RPG steeped in surrealism, art history, and raw emotion. Its name was Clair Obscur Expedition 33. At first glance, the title evokes mystery. In French, Clair Obscur literally translates to twilight, which I think is interesting. So in French, it's twilight, but its deeper meaning comes from the Italian artistic term, and I'm going to fucking butcher it. Chiaroscuro.
Yep, butchered. All right.
I'm sure if I said it like chiaroscuro, you know, if you say it in like the shitty Italian accent, you'll get it good. But if you say it like a normal person in America, you can't say it right. The interplay of light and shadow used by Renaissance painters to create depth and drama. It's a fitting name for a game that balances contrast in every corner, light and dark, peace and war, classical and modern. Behind the project was, again, this guy's name is just Guillaume. It's Guillaume.
Okay.
That's his first name.
Okay.
Okay? That's his first fucking name, this loser.
He's not a loser.
I'm assuming it's Broke. It's B-R-O-C-H-E, but it might be Broche.
Okay.
An ex-Ubisoft producer who had grown disillusioned with the mainstream industry. After years working on traditional games and playing even more, Broche found himself burned out. Everything started to feel the same. So in 2018 or 2019, he took a risk. He opened Unreal Engine, not as a developer, but as someone determined to learn. And from that spark, Clair Obscur Expedition 33 was born. Broche knew what he wanted, a return to the turn-based RPG, a genre he felt had been left behind. Nobody's doing turn-based RPGs anymore, he said. I wanted to bring them back. But he wasn't interested in nostalgia for nostalgia's sake. This would be something new, modern, expressive, and strange in the best possible way. The world of Expedition 33 draws heavily from surrealist painters of the 20th century and the, and this again, Belle Epoque.
Okay.
That, it's a golden age in Europe between the end of the Franco-Prussian War and the start of World War I, where there was no war. It was a time of elegance and optimism, of artistic rebellion and creative abundance, and especially in France. So every time there's a war, France just gets beat the fuck out.
Yeah.
Like, they're just in such a shitty spot in the world where if England has a war with Germany, France is in between.
Yeah.
If Spain has a war with England, France is in between. If, like, anywhere from the east side of Europe to the west side, France is right there to take the brunt. And it's always like some, the Spain or the English who have a fucking problem with someone.
Yeah.
So they're just always caught in the middle. So they're always beat the fuck out of. So especially for this time period, it is one of the few times in France's history where they experienced true peace. There was nothing happening for like 40 years or 50 years. It was a time of elegance and optimism, of artistic rebellion and creative abundance. That spirit infuses every frame of the game. Initially, the concept was very different. Set in a steampunk version of Victorian England. That was the original concept. He wanted to do a Victorian England. Yeah, isn't
interesting. Yeah.
But as the team evolved, so did the vision. They pivoted to a dreamlike version of France, rich with fantasy and symbolism, better suited to the surrealist tones they wanted to explore. To build the game, Broche turned to Reddit. A single post brought in collaborations from all over the world. Artists, developers, designers, eventually a small studio formed. And I just want you to know, he literally went to Reddit and said, can anyone help me with this game?
Mm-hmm. So cool.
There were like five people who just said, yeah, sure, I'll help you. And then eventually he would have a list of 15 people. And he'd be like, I'll probably get no one out of this 15 people list. And he ended up like hiring 10 of them.
That's awesome. This is the coolest way to find people for this.
So fucking crazy.
You just get a ragtag crew together and make the best game. Like, fuck off.
Seriously. Eventually, a small studio formed, Sandfall Interactive, just 30 people, many of whom had worked far outside their original roles. With limited resources, they leaned into Unreal Engine 5, which proved more efficient for a small team and allowed their ideas to flourish without the overhead of larger pipelines. And I just want you guys to know, and I read this... Almost everything I read said it was mostly this group of 30 people who made this game.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read one guy who is super pissed off that everyone kept saying that it's mostly this group of 30 people who made this game. And he said, well, if you look at the credits, you could see like it's a whole list of people. And it's like, you get some more information. I got the music guy, composer. He went out and said, yes, we did have like a choir I worked with for the last 3 days of the game's development.
Yeah.
Yes, we had this orchestra I worked with for within the last 2 weeks of the game's development. So, and like all these people are technically featured.
Yeah.
So that's why that list is so long. There are people who helped them. They had an animation team from India help them, but that's after they already created all the characters. All they wanted them to do was help them get them to move right so they didn't look so like blocky when moving.
They're saying that a group of about 30, 33 of them or whatever it was developed the game, but then they still had other people help them with other parts of the game, whether it was the publishing, whether it was the marketing, whether it was helping with some of the sound or audio. Like,
they
still made the base part of it. They didn't have
the base
every
part.
Aspect.
Probably 80% of that game was made by these 30 people, and the last 20% was helped with, and they still were involved in that last 20%.
Yeah, and so it's not to discredit any of the people who helped with it, but they still made it with a group of 30 people.
They put them in the fucking credits.
No, I know, I'm just saying, like, I'm not trying to discredit those people.
Even
though we're trying to say it was this group of 30 that made this.
Dude, it was amazing reading this guy's to fucking shit, because he's just sitting there shitting on him, saying, like, it's bullshit that everyone's giving the 30 people all the credit. It's horse shit. And then he's like, well, I still think it's impressive that they were able to do it. Even a team of 500 people would have been impressive. And I'm like,
dude, I know.
Shut the fuck up,
dude. And if you say shit like that, like, why say the first thing?
Yeah, why? What is the point?
If you're still like, that's still impressive, but I want you to be accurate with the number, like,
God.
Dude, I know that a lot of people exaggerate shit, but not everyone exaggerates this. Not everyone exaggerates it for a certain reason. And statistics is the easiest thing to like skew in whatever favor you want it to be. Like, it's so easy to manipulate math to make things sound better or worse than they are. And just if you don't really care and you're still like, this is a very impressive thing, like, just say the impressive shit. Why do you have to dog on the other shit? Like, who cares?
Like, at most, people working on the game, like, total was probably around 100 people, right?
Yeah.
That's it. That's fucking it. So shut the fuck up. Just stop. And stop being an asshole.
I don't care how many people worked on this game, whether it was one or 50,000. Like, this is, we're going to talk about this throughout the game. It's still a very impressive game. Like, that doesn't, the size of the development team doesn't necessarily make the game. It's really impressive when a small size development team makes an impressive game like something like this or Baldur's Gate. But that's not to say that, like, it's better to have a smaller or bigger team, or bigger teams shouldn't get credit, like, and little teams should get bigger credit. Like, definitely it's more impressive for a little team to hit when they hit harder, but it's still the same, like, game.
Yeah.
We're still
It's impressive either way. They made an amazing game, no matter how many people worked on this fucking thing. It's, and with all the shitty games that come out with the giant amount of people on them, this game is fucking impressive with just 30.
And that's where, like, those stats are really, like, where you should hone in on it. Because it's like, like, this is, like, this really is impressive.
How many people worked on fucking Suicide Squad, right?
Oh, fuck. I don't even.
You don't want to know, because it's such a bad fucking game.
And if I heard it was over, like, 200, I'd be like, what the fuck?
How did not a single one of you get this fucking right?
Like, how did not somebody there be like, this is terrible, guys. We need to, like, fucking cut this shit, start over.
I think they did remember in the
but they couldn't get it approved or whatever.
What was it called? It was like the stupid positivity, the
the toxic positivity.
Toxic positivity that they had. All right, the soundtrack became the emotional backbone of the game. Roche discovered Lorien Testard on SoundCloud and quickly brought him on board as the third official member of the team. I just want you to know, he didn't like interview this guy. He reached out to him by email on SoundCloud and said, hey, your music sounds real cool. Dude. Do you want to write a game with me?
Dude, this story is insane, and this music, fuck you, dude. I hate how much I love this music. Like,
it's so good.
Fuck you. It's, I can't get it out of my head. Good. It's in my head, like, nonstop since I played the game. Like, every day I'm like, clear obscure, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, fuck you, fuck you. I can't get it out. I can't. Yeah. It's worse than Night Trap.
Well, no, don't say that. How dare you? How fucking dare you?
Well, Night Trap's worse. Clair Obscur is, like, really amazing, and that's why I love how much
I love Night Trap. I love the song.
Well, I love Night Trap too, but, like, that is an intentionally cheesy song, I feel like.
Yeah, for sure. Quickly brought it. And he was the third official member of this team. The second, I believe, was she was originally hired a developer, but I think she shifted into a writer position eventually.
Okay.
Those three people was a writer, him as, like, the president slash developer, because he had never developed a game before, so he was learning on the go, and then this music guy. And he's like, these are the most important things I need right now to start. And I think that's a great fucking foundation, honestly, because this game does feel like an epic. It feels like a fucking, like, musical epic. Like,
And the music feels so integrated with the story. Like, people talk about that shit with, like, Cowboy Bebop, how, like, the music fits with every scene dynamically.
Yeah.
This hits so hard throughout the entire thing. Like, I'm like, fuck you. Like, how do you do so good?
Yeah. I don't know how this guy did so good. Again, he was just some guy on SoundCloud.
One guy. Like, I hate you. I hate you. I love you, but I hate how talented you are.
He's totally,
like,
going to get so much work now.
Oh, 100%. Dude, everyone. He's going to be like the Lin-Manuel Miranda of the video game world, I hope. Yep, like, I really like the.
He's
what the
so
fuck,
young,
dude?
Too. I think he's in his 20s.
God damn, I'd suck his dick.
Yeah.
Don't even care what he looks like.
The music they created together fused classical opera with metal. And yes, both styles appear in the game. One vocalist had performed in Devil May Cry, and the other was a trained opera singer.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, so the metal vocalist from Devil May Cry was literally when you're fighting one of the bosses, he's the other vocalist.
Nice.
He is traditionally a metal vocalist.
That's fucking awesome.
For some reason, when I saw Devil May Cry, at first I thought Devil Wears Prada. And I was like,
I love Devil Wears Prada. That would be so cool.
There's no fucking way they pulled that guy in for this fucking shit.
Yeah.
And then it was not. So.
I mean, that would be cool, but yeah.
Yeah. Combat took cues from Final Fantasy VII, VIII, and X rather than games like Persona, though camera movements were inspired by the latter. Mm-hmm. And I just note on this guy is, seriously, I looked at five fucking articles that all said the opposite of each other.
Yeah.
There were two that were very strong on how much Persona inspired this game. And the guy even came out, Broche, and said, yeah, like, Persona's most inspired thing was their camera movements. We really liked, yes, the way the camera worked.
Yeah.
But for some reason, all these articles were talking about how it Persona inspired the combat, Persona inspired the dodging, Persona inspired, and none of it's true.
Yeah, the dodging isn't Persona at all. But no. I will say, like, the way you pick your skills kind of feels Persona-y, but yeah, the camera, I 100% agree with, like, yeah, that feels, yeah, Persona 5 more than anything.
Like, yeah, we really like Persona's, mm-hmm, camera movements, and we, like, took a lot of heavy inspiration from that.
But all those turn-based games have similar kind of UI systems, yeah, like, especially, yeah, the Final Fantasy games, like, they especially have that kind of system. A lot, yeah, of the, well, even the newer moving, Final Fantasies do.
They're moving a little bit away from turn-based combat, I feel like.
Well, it's still kind of like turn-based, but it's like action turn-based, kind of like this, yeah, is in a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Dodge and parry mechanics were lifted straight from Sekiro, a favorite game of the director.
Yes.
So he was actually playing Sekiro heavily when he was making this game.
Sekiro's hard as fuck.
I think it's hilarious that he's just like, why don't we do what this game does?
Oh, dude. Seriously, though.
Meanwhile, the co-founder of Sandfall brought influence from games like Paper Mario and Chrono Trigger, adding a unique texture to the design. And what's funny is he was even saying, like, so you want to have dodge and parry mechanics in this game, you, mm-hmm, should check out Paper Mario because they've already done that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's as early as, like, 98 or something, 97.
Fair.
It's a turn-based game with fucking dodge and parry mechanics in it.
Yeah, there's
much
a couple hard, of
much
them
easier
out there,
but dodge and parry mechanics, but you know.
Yeah, yeah, bigger windows.
Yeah. Despite the tiny team, Clair Obscur Expedition 33 had a grand cinematic feel. Charlie Cox, which I cannot believe Charlie Cox was in this fucking game, famed for, yeah, playing Daredevil, voiced the protagonist Gustav. Andy Serkis lent his voice to Renor.
What?
I didn't. Grounded the dreamlike story and human emotion, and I was like, Andy Serkis, fucking
no wonder here? No wonder I fucking, yeah, love that voice acting in this game. Well, and Shadow, yeah, Hearts Mael, fucking,
oh, is she, yeah, so the,
yeah,
rest of
Jennifer English,
like,
Jennifer,
yeah, yeah,
English,
the rest of them weren't super famous, but those two, I was like, as soon as I saw Charlie Cox, I was like, no fucking way Charlie Cox is, yeah, in this fucking game.
I can't remember the list of the six games that everyone's saying are going to be nominated for game of the year. But of those six games, Jennifer English is a voice actor in three of them.
Oh my God. That's,
I'm
amazing.
Like,
Jennifer
fuck,
English is having a killer career.
Dude,
did she
play
Lune?
So good.
She played Lune, right?
She was Mael.
Oh, she was Mael. Then who the,
yes,
hell was Lune?
I don't remember who Lune was. But yeah, Mael is Shadowheart, Jennifer English.
I didn't recognize any of the other actors, including English there, but Charlie Cox and Andy Serkis. Andy Serkis is very famous for voicing Gollum.
That's crazy. Yes.
And Charlie Cox's Daredevil in the Netflix adaptation of Daredevil.
Yes.
And now in Marvel, I believe, too.
Yes, he is.
These performances grounded the dreamlike story and human emotion. When the game released on April 24th, it didn't just succeed, it exploded. Over 1 million units sold in just 3 days.
Yes, it was wild.
Remember,
dude,
when we talked about It Takes Two?
Yes.
And how they were like excited to get 1 million units within the first year or something.
Or 2 million in the first year or something like that.
Yeah,
yeah, something like
and
that.
Like the 3 days. That's all,
dude, this
exploded.
Like, this was a Game Pass game too, if I remember,
yep,
right. And, yep, it exploded. Like, fucking phenomenal. And for a Game Pass game to have 1 million sales in 3 days is even, yep, more wild because it was, yep, free for a lot of the users of it.
And just so you know, it became the most listened to game soundtrack on Spotify.
Oh, easily.
And
it's,
I think,
probably
it was
one of the most YouTube things.
I put game soundtrack. When I read it, it wasn't super clear what it meant, but it seemed like it was the most streamed thing on Spotify altogether.
Oh,
I just
100%.
Assume they meant game soundtrack, but it could have been like the number one stream soundtrack on Spotify.
Either
time.
Way, dude, I wouldn't, yeah, be surprised.
And in a rare moment of political recognition, French President Emmanuel Macron personally praised the game as a cultural achievement.
Damn. Yeah. Well, dude, honestly, like, the funniest thing I've been seeing is I've been seeing a shit ton of memes lately about people talking about like, fuck this game for making me love the French. Like, I've never liked the French before, but now I'm obsessed with your culture. Now I love
your
music.
Who the hell doesn't like the French? What is the point?
I don't know. There's been always, like, a weird kind of, like, pseudo-hate for the French, kind of like a Nickelback kind of hate or a Creed kind of hate.
French people, they're fine.
Yeah, I mean, I've never had anything wrong with them, but there is always that, like, they do get made fun of, like, kind of like you're saying, like, in the wars and stuff, they get shit on a lot. Yeah. Like, they do kind of just get shit on a lot for their everything that they are.
But also, like, America's going to be the new France. Don't you worry, guys.
Oh, we're coming. We're coming right at you. We're going to be the laughingstock of the world. It's coming. I'm away from everybody now, so.
Like the fucking French.
But no, it's been the funniest thing ever, seeing all those memes. And seriously, though, like, I have such a more appreciation for, like, a lot of, like, things that I didn't pay attention to. I didn't pay attention to a lot of French culture, but, like, I am obsessed with, like, this, like, song. I'm obsessed with listening to more French music after this, for sure.
And honestly, it was kind of refreshing to play this game and to see that, because, you know, when I thought of this game, when you told me about it, I'm like, okay, it's going to be a JRPG. So I'm thinking like Japanese influence, blah, 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 big titted girls.
Yes.
You know, the normal shit that fucking JRPGs do.
I did not explain that well.
And so I was like playing it. I'm like, this just feels better than a fucking JRPG right now. This feels so real.
Yes.
I was really excited to learn that there was a French company that made it, because like it just makes it so, like, now JRPGs don't have to be about the big titted girl and the fucking over-the-top fucking bad guy, and like it can be as this simple of a fucking game. Like, I actually really enjoyed it that much.
I will say this game probably just as much sexualized as some of the anime things. The jiggle physics, especially in this game, people talk about, especially the swimsuit costumes. Like, I saw a couple of TikTok videos both for Lune's swimsuit and for Gustav's swimsuit.
I got Lune's and Sayel's, and I never got, I don't, I hoped, and I really hoped that they wouldn't make one for Mael.
They did make one for Mael. It's different though. It's a gold, like, one piece.
Okay, good. It's a one piece. Cause I was going to say, she's 16. Come on, guys. Don't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely more tamed than the rest.
Okay, good.
Like Gustav's, I saw a bunch of women on TikTok posting the jiggle physics of Gustav. Like, when you would move and, like, swivel real quick, you would see his penis jiggle, and they're like, oh my god. And I'm like, oh my god. People are so bad. But then, like, if you're playing Lune in her swimsuit and flying over, like, Rumble and stuff, like, her butt, like, jiggles, like, perfectly too. It's like, the jiggle figures are phenomenal for what
they got
are.
Perfect. They tested them in the office.
That is the one JRPG shit they got right. Their jiggle figures are actually better than a lot of JRPGs.
They're not, like, over the fucking top.
No, they're not. They're very, very subtle.
Covering fucking clothes, and, like, it's super nice.
Oh,
actually,
it's
really
the
refreshing.
It's the most, like, secret, kind of, like, hidden, kind of, like, you have to really be a pervert to kind of see the jiggle physics of this.
It takes a lot to find that.
Yeah.
I would have never found it. Well, now a film adaptation is in early stages.
Fuck yes.
Already.
Fuck
Kepler
yes.
Interactive, the game's funders, remain involved, and Story Kitchen has joined to help bring cinematic version of Expedition 33 to life. And
I can't remember.
I think we've talked about Story Kitchen. I think they're doing It Takes Two as well.
Yes, I think they are. I think so.
They're taking over all the fucking video game movies.
Well, dude, and honestly, like, this could be such a cool thing to do. And I already, because I thought of this the entire time I was playing as Gustav. You know who I want for Gustav? Robert Pattinson.
No, not Robert Pattinson. He looks like Jake Gyllenhaal.
No, he looks way more like Robert Pattinson.
No, he doesn't.
Yes,
guys, please.
He does, dude.
The entire time I was like, does Jake Gyllenhaal play? That's
I thought it was
Charlie
Robert Pattinson.
Cox.
So did my wife. Like, she walked in and she's like, is that Robert Pattinson? And I was like, it totally looks like
All
him.
Right. Guys, please email us. Is it Jake Gyllenhaal lookalike, or is it Robert Pattinson?
Yeah, I'll make a TikTok with this segment right here, where I'm like, Who's it look like more? And I'll put a picture of Jake Gyllenhaal, and I'll put a picture of Robert Pattinson.
Because I am curious. Because all I could tell, all I could see the entire time I was playing as him is, I'm Jake Gyllenhaal. Where's
see,
that?
That's
fucking
so funny.
Rabbit?
Me and my wife were both Robert Pattinson so hard. So yeah, I'm curious who's gonna have more of a vote here. We need to put this to a test.
Yeah, we put it to a test. I'm also curious.
Yes.
From Reddit post to presidential praise, from burnout to brilliance, Clair Obscur Expedition 33 is a rare kind of success story. Not one built on trends or tech gimmicks, but on vision, vulnerability, and deep love for the art of games.
Yes.
It is a painting in motion, a dream etched in code, a twilight journey that brought the turn-based RPG back into the light.
100% agreed.
Yeah, although I don't agree, one thing I do not agree with him on is the turn-based RPG is dying.
I don't agree with that too, because there are turn-based RPGs, like even Persona 5, that wasn't that long ago. Yeah.
No, not that long. Maybe like 3 years ago, probably 3-4 years.
Well, and they had the Persona 5 Royale, but then they've also had other turn-based games.
Yeah, then they've been doing Octopath, came out like 5 years ago or 6 years ago, I think. Like there have been other turn-based games that have done fairly well. One thing I did agree with on them is like all the other turn-based games that are coming out are more like love letters.
Yes.
So, and this is actually funny because I read, again, articles are just so shitty, man. People do not do their fucking research. I read all these articles. Fair. And I even saw the original interview with him saying this. He claimed that other turn-based RPGs are like love letters. They're essentially saying like, we see the original concept, we understand it, and here's our take on it.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're giving you this letter of recognition by making this game.
Yes.
And this other thing said that he described his game as a love letter, but in truth, he described his game more as a darker toned idea than your typical love letter turn-based RPG.
I agree with him full-heartedly because I don't think
and
this,
I did too.
Like,
I thought
this
that was a great
this
way
has
to
a lot of great homages to a lot of games. You can definitely tell the references it has. You can definitely tell like where the things that he likes and the things that he referenced and the things that he like put into this game and why things are created the way they are, but this feels like the most fresh turn-based RPG I've played in long. Like, dude,
well,
let's
stop you there.
Yeah,
and let's get into that with the best of the worst. How about
let's
that?
Do it. I typically like there's some turn-based games
this
I'm okay with.
Part by the way,
I love the turn-based shit in this. Like, this is my first like turn-based game that I'm like, I can't put down. I think about constantly. I want to play every bit
this
of the time.
I've been trying to get Steven into for years, and he's been such a little bitch about it.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
No, you'll love this game because the fucking story is phenomenal. And you're like, wait, it's a turn-based RPG.
Well, there's not. Yeah, I guess it's just like a lot of times, sometimes like the slowness of it and like.
Yeah. Yeah, they can feel slow. And this, they do keep it interesting with the parry and dodging mechanics. In the game, guys, not too many spoilers on this. You do parry and dodge while you are doing the turn base, while your opponents are taking turns. There's also a jump mechanic in there, a special parry that you can do. They keep it fresh, they keep it really on point, and they keep you interested during a battle where you're not just waiting for the enemy to do their thing. You are actively participating while they are doing things.
And I know my diehard difficult lovers, my Souls-like lovers and stuff, don't want to hear this, but you can dodge. You don't have to try to parry everything.
Yeah. I would parry sometimes. There's some things
there's 100% times you should definitely parry. Most of the time you should parry because of the counters. Because
chromatic ballerinas or whatever they were when I fought them, it was just like, you have to parry them to beat them. That's the only way, because they're flying, and flying doesn't get you.
Yeah.
You don't hit as much on flying targets.
Well, that's why you just shoot the flying targets.
Yeah. But these were chromatic, so they're a little stronger. So easier to parry because you'll do 32,000 damage versus like 200 damage shooting.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
No, like definitely like do a bit of both. Like there's certain things that you should, if you can't get the timing right, just dodge. But if you can get the timing right, 100% parry. And definitely practice it, but don't feel like you have to parry everything because you will die a lot if you try to parry everything.
I actually read something that a guy was able to go through the entire game on easy mode without parrying or dodging.
Oh, yeah. I have heard that too.
You do not need to do it. If you choose, if you're complaining about how hard it is to play the game because you have to dodge or parry, then just put it on easy mode, be the little bitch, and play the fucking game and get the cool story. Because that's exactly what you need to do.
The game does a really cool thing when you're picking your difficulty. It tells you kind of the windows you have for each thing, like parrying and dodging. and it shows you that. So like you can see how drastically easier easy is compared, or like just the story based one is compared to like the normal difficulty.
Yeah, for sure. I will say one of the things I did not like about this game, and there's really only one thing.
Okay.
They have some of these side missions that you can do.
Yeah.
And one of them is the Gestrel Beach ones.
Yes.
And there's just one fucking game that's horrifically bad.
Which one?
And it was just like, I went online just to see what other people thought about this, and they all agreed. Like, nobody likes this fucking game. It's the one where someone's throwing something at you, and you don't parry to hit it.
Oh, the volleyball one.
Yeah, you have to shoot the volleyball with your magic.
Yeah, you have to magic blast them back, yeah.
But, like, it was literally the worst game. Out of all of the things you do in there, that I had the most trouble with. And also, it was just kind of boring. And then I go online and I find out everyone feels the same. There's not a single person who actually liked it on this Reddit. There was like 15 million posts on this Reddit post, and all of them hated it so much.
I hated it too, but that one wasn't the hardest one for me. The hardest one for me.
No, it's not the hardest one.
Yeah.
It's just, it's hard, and it's also not entertaining.
It's very not entertaining. It's so frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah. So
because you either get it or you die.
And that's the only thing that I did not like was that one game. So just that is the only gripe I have, is I really wish they would just like update the game now, take that out and replace it with something fun.
I have the two most minuscule gripes with this game. First of my minuscule gripes is I think it
booty.
No, I mean, there's a decent amount of booty. I'm okay with the booty levels.
Give me some more booty, please.
I'm okay with the booty levels, especially because I'm not supposed to be looking at some of the booties because of how young some of the booties are. Well, yeah, one of them in particular. But I wasn't looking at her booty anyways. I'm looking at CL.
Don't lie to me.
CL is the one everyone loves. Fuck off.
Yeah, CL's got some big hips.
CL is fucking sexy as shit.
She's had a kid, too, I think.
Yes. Well... yeah, kind of. I will go into that. Let's not go to that. That's dark as shit. I do think that the game would be better if you're able to hit the over the 9,999 damage earlier in the game. Like, I wish you could go over that maximum damage point earlier in the game.
I can see why they pushed it to later.
I do too.
So you don't explore so much, so you focus more on the story. But yeah. I also feel your pain, because that was one of my gripes early playing. I'm like, why did I just do 9,999 damage? What are the odds that I did that exact amount of damage? And then I did it again, and I'm like, oh my god, they capped it. They fucking capped it, didn't they?
Well, even the yes, in the Gestrel Arena, one of the people at Gestrels you can talk to has a challenge for you that you have to hit over 9,999, and that's pretty early on in the game. So I'm like, oh, I should be able to do this by this point. Why else would you bring me to this character? But you're not supposed to be able to do it at that point. Yeah. You're supposed to do it like another 20 hours later. And that's where it feels a little bit off to me. Like, I do feel like they capped that too far. I think you should have been able to do that before you got to the Paintress.
Yeah. Maybe jump out 10,000. But I think it's to not make the bosses at that point too easy. Because you could I could have literally just went on a grinding phase, grinded up to level 99, and then fought the Paintress at that level.
Oh, you're not grinding to level 99 with the early game shit, dude. You don't get enough experience. You need that later game shit.
But
it would take you forever.
It would take you forever to do it, but you could. And I think that's what they were trying to avoid.
Yeah.
Because in normal games, and this is actually super common in JRPGs, you grind like crazy. Like a lot. And if you don't grind, you're not going to beat the final boss.
The grinding in this game isn't too bad.
No, it's not. But like, that was probably their way of saying, like, you don't have to grind right now. Just fucking fight her.
No, I mean, I agree. And I feel like they did try to push the story more.
That's pretty clear. It seems like Act 3 is the act to do more of the extra shit.
Oh, 100%. That's when you should do it, because you need to be leveled that high to do most of the shit, honestly. Like. Yeah. You don't realize how difficult the game is until you get to Act 3. Like,
and there's some.
It gets more difficult every act. Honestly, you hit a spike at Act 1. You hit a spike at Act 2. It's fucking wild.
It's actually pretty cool how many cool builds there are in this game. They have a system called Pictos and Luminos.
Yeah,
and essentially, a Pictos is an ability you can equip. You can have three Pictos equipped at any given time. After you win four battles with that ability on, it becomes buyable. Mm-hmm. So you can spend extra points in order to always have it equipped while you equip three more things.
Yeah. Basically, you can Lunas count as Pictos, but you don't get the passive buffs that they give. Like, so Pictos give also passive buffs like speed and HP buffs as
you
well.
You don't get those.
Yeah. And so the higher level the ability is, which the only way to level the abilities is to get a second copy of it.
Yeah.
So at a higher level.
Sometimes hard to find, but there's a bunch of traders and shit out there to help you. Yes. In total, there's not a lot of bad I can say about this game. Honestly, the RPG system's really cool. The combat's really cool. The traveling is actually a little frustrating sometimes, but once you get SKA, it's really like it's quick. Once you get the flight ability, it's super quick.
Yeah. Late game traveling is the best for sure. It's not even close. Yeah. It makes it so much easier.
I will say there's some like blockiness to this game. I was traveling with SKA, who's a larger character on the map, and I actually got stuck. And I'm like, I don't understand how to get out of this, because not only was I stuck, I could not retransform into my original form.
Yes. There are there is other buggy stuff too. Like I had stuff where I was hitting invisible walls on paths.
Yeah.
And then I had to just go over to the left a little bit. And I was like, why is there an invisible wall here? Like this is obviously a path.
Yeah.
But like it was just like overshooting the wall a little bit.
I don't remember where I've complained about this before, but I have, where, you know, instead of putting an invisible wall, instead of doing it, just put a physical thing that is shown, and that is why you can't do what you were trying. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, how much harder is it to make a sheer cliff face? Because in this game, they do this a lot, actually. They have this, like, rubble that looks very walkable. And in truth, it is not at all.
Yeah.
And you, like, try to walk up it, and you hit a wall, and you're like, oh my God, just put a fucking like sheer cliff wall there. And then I don't have to worry about that shit. And I get it. It's to make the map more realistic.
They do put that wall up when you get like SK's fly ability. If you go up to the edge of the map, so they do have that wall that appears, which is kind of funny. Yeah. They have it in other spots, but not in all the spots.
Yeah. It would be, I just always think it's a better idea to have a physical shower for these things.
That I mean, I know it breaks immersion a little bit, but it's good to know, like, I can't travel here at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or at all, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's always been a cool thing for me, because then you really make players focus on where to travel rather than where not to.
Yeah. And I really like what they do with the outer walls when you're like flying around, like I said, with SK, because like you don't see those walls until you touch the walls and then the walls turn white. Like, but even that is a really good indicator, like without breaking into too much immersion. Yeah.
Yeah. And also it's a very good indicator of why that's happening.
Exactly. Yeah.
Actually, it's really cool on the walls on this one. We won't tell you why it happens, but it's actually really I like that a lot. It's a really cool idea to have it this way.
But yeah.
All right, you want to move on?
Yeah, let's go into the first few hours of the game.
Yeah, sure.
First few hours to me are extremely fucking captivating. Hearing all about the stories, learning about the characters, witnessing the grimage early on is very
impactful.
Seriously,
in the first like 10 minutes of the game, you witness everyone you know just die. And you're like, okay, well, this is cool.
And then also just that first, like, as soon as you make it to the island, the just bossing that Renoir does to your team, and then having you scattered and finding each team member one at a time, like that was really cool, especially because Scott talks about this all the time. This is one of the best I've seen for tutorials per character ever. Every time you get introduced, it's
like
so
you don't
good.
Have to do it. Yes,
it's so good.
Always give the option. Don't fucking force people into it if they don't want to do it, and give the option if they do. It's perfect. That's like the best way to do it of all time.
100%. This is probably the best tutorials I've ever seen. And honestly, they were simple. They made sense. They didn't like go too far into it. They let you just like read a couple of things. They purposely told you what things to do to learn how to combo with each character to start. And that was all you needed to learn how to use each character. And that was so perfect.
Yeah, I would say the laziest one was Gustav, but I think there's a reason for that. So, there, a lot of the other abilities, they're very mixed because they're all fucking crazy out there. Like, everyone has a different way of using abilities, like different buffs like they get off those abilities. Like, it's just interesting how they do it. I will say the first 2 hours, perfectly passable. There's nothing wrong with it. There's no boring moments where you're like, oh God, I'm slouching again. Oh my God, I have to do, you know, it's one of those games where you're captivated up until you end the game pretty much.
100%. I never lost any interest in this game. I wanted to 100% this game ever since I started it, honestly. Like, this game is so crazy.
Yeah, and a lot of people have messaged me, actually, after I started this and said, oh, I 100%ed it. I'm like, okay, great. Yeah, great. You don't even have to keep fucking telling me, but everyone keeps telling me for some reason. So people are really excited to 100% this game is what I'm getting
at. This is one of those games that you want to. Like, this is one of the first times I'm like, I want to do everything. Give me all of it. I want more. Like, this is one of those things where you're just like instantly wanting a sequel. Like, it's ridiculous.
Well, and you might not get a sequel for this one, but again, they made an entire world.
Oh, yeah.
Like, their whole thing was to make Clair Obscur a franchise. They want to build on the idea of it. And there's an overarching theme in here, essentially, where you're writers versus painters. And I really would love for them to jump into that theme a little bit more, because that's fucking sweet.
Well, and there's a whole thing about grieving, too, which is just brilliant. Honestly, like, I've been getting so tired of that trope in a lot of, like, horror movies, focusing on grieving as the, like, main antagonist. Like, There is no actual villain. It's just the family's grief, like, embodied in a physical form. Like, fuck off. But, like, the way they handle grief in this is, honestly, a lot of times even better than The Last of Us for me. Like, this is phenomenal with the way they handle grief, and the way they talk about death is so, and just, I don't know. It's so beautiful. It's so enthralling. It's everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Honestly, great game. Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our next little segment.
All right, so let's talk about Steve Achieves. So this
what
game,
does Steve Achieve? Absolutely fucking nothing.
Everything, bitch. I'm going to 100% this. I haven't 100%ed it yet, but I'm getting there.
Seen him achieve a 6-time orgasm in less than 2 minutes.
Yeah. Dude, your eye contact.
I'm not impressed.
I was seeing what the fox says while staring Scott in the eyes. Yeah, that's mm-hmm, how it happened. Mm-hmm. So game is about 30 hours long and about 60 to 70 hours to 100% complete the game on average. One of the achievements in the game I wanted to bring up, one of the hardest ones is probably, called Peace at Last. Your goal in this achievement is to beat Simon, and you know what? Fuck Simon. So hard. Simon is the
Simon
most
says.
Elden Ring inspired boss, and even the entrance to him in his arena is as souls-like as fuck, dude. It's brilliant, it's gorgeous, it's wild. It makes you feel like you're in Elden Ring. And this guy will make you his bitch until you farm enough to get good, or get good enough to finish him off. Like, I haven't beat him yet. He's fucking awful. I have mail at 99. I have over 238 lumens. He's still a bitch, dude. Like, he's fucking awful. Hate him.
Eventually you'll beat him.
Yeah, I will. Another fun everyone loves and hates, as Scott was talking about earlier, was one of these. The Gestural games. Your goal, if it wasn't blatantly obviously, beat all of the Gestural games. These are scattered across the map and can be very tough. These games consist of a going up style game, which is a platformer where you're just constantly moving up. That one is a parkour.
It was described hard as shit. Game as a parkour.
What? Yeah.
I did it in like 2 tries.
The going up one where you have to like keep platforming upwards and you have to go on
the parkour one.
Dude, I am still struggling with that one. Fuck off.
I got it done easily.
The parrying volleyball game Scott was talking about earlier.
Oh my god, that one just fucking blows. It's a terrible game.
The climbing wall while dodging falling shit, which is another one people struggle with a little bit, but I made it through pretty easily. There's a time trial and another parkour challenge that's more just like spinning pathways and like rotating areas and stuff.
Yeah.
But not only do you get an achievement for all these, you also get swimsuits for the whole gang to make this dark game about death and grieving a happier look to it. And you can have fun with the jiggle physics.
Yep.
Also, I wanted to say that gamers beware, you can miss out on some early achievements in this game in the first area. Two main ones you want to look out for are, they actually kind of coincide with each other. A peculiar encounter, there's a mime fight in the first area that you can easily miss.
You know what's funny is I missed it and I went back because I got a new ability and I was like, okay, well, let's go back through all of them and see if I can break open some of these things that I probably missed. And I found the mime. I'm like, were you here the whole fucking time?
Yeah. So I wasn't sure if you could go back to it or not. I couldn't remember
you
if you could.
You
okay,
can.
Good. I'm glad you can. Because that's also one of the only ways you can get the connoisseur achievement, which is finding all 33 music records that are scattered across the game. So it is good to look out for those things.
Found so much.
What's up?
I don't even know how many I've found so far.
I think I've got like 28
I've got
or something like that.
20 at least. I'm still in Act 3, so.
Oh, okay. Also, another one that everyone should look out for, make sure that you talk to your party members every night, as building everyone's relationship status will give you rewards, quests, and skills, and achievements. There's achievements for getting everyone's relationship status up to 7. Also, there's a lot of bonus cutscenes that are especially incredible, especially talking about Eskay's. Eskay's got some of the best cutscenes in this game.
You're saying Eskay, but it's Eskia.
Or Eskia, sorry. Like, one of my favorite things is where he's talking to Verso, and he's like, I too am woo, but also I'm wee. So the wee balance out to the woo. So we have a wee woo lifestyle.
That's good. There's a great one where you get to sleep with is her name CL?
CL, yeah. Or CL or whatever it is. I can't remember.
I think it's CL.
I think it's CL.
She's like, what, has it been a while for you? And you're just like, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh man, CL and Verso's relationship is really great. I also love there's a great moment with Monaco. Where they're talking about like fighting and something, and he's like, I don't want to go with you, but there'll be tons of fighting. Oh. Oh, well, that sounds really interesting. So you'll go with me. Yeah, I'll go with you. And there's
Monaco is a Gestrel, and Gestrels love to fight.
Yes. There's another moment with Monaco where he actually asks Verso if he wants to spoon with him. And then Verso asks if he wants, you can ask him, one of the options you have is, do you want to be Little Spoon? And so I asked him that. He's like, well, of course, Little Spoon's the best or something like that. It's so fucking funny.
Yeah, yeah. It's good.
That's what I have for some of the achievements. There's a lot of really cool, interesting achievements, but those are some of the ones that I wanted to focus on and tell you guys about. So I'll go ahead and go into our next segment, the hunt for all the eggs.
Yeah, I'm curious to what eggs are in here. I don't know if I found, I know I found a few because I found an enemy that was named like 1-0 Punch. And I figured that meant One Punch Man.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so like I'm like, oh, there must be more than this then.
There's quite a few. I'm not going to say them all. I've got a list of about 5 of them that I'm going to talk about. So,
okay. Was One Punch Man one of them?
No, it's not actually.
Oh, nice.
So I'm glad you mentioned it. So for our first Easter egg, right at the beginning in Lumiere, there's a building you can go up to, and you will hear some sex noises coming from within.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
If you clip on the building, you can hear more moaning. The guy's moaning sounds sometimes like H. John Benjamin. So think Archer or Bosberger is just, that's the kind of thing you hear
less
from
emotion,
him. And then you
less emotion.
Yeah, way less. But I don't do a good H. John Benjamin. But if you click and listen to this 33 times, the couple that are having sex inside, your character, Sophie at the time, will talk about how there's some people who don't actually go to the Grimage. They celebrate their leaving each other in more intimate ways. And so you can sit there and keep listening. And once you get to the end, you can hear the woman say, okay, come on now. You've been listening for too long now. And it made things exciting at first, but it's now a bit awkward. And then you actually get a Lumina to go away.
Nice.
It's the fucking funniest shit ever, but I loved it so much. Another really good one.
They were like, why don't you come and join us? And that was like the end of it or something.
I mean, that was funny. That would be funny too. But I just love that like they were like, they knew you were listening the entire time. And they're like, all right, it was fun at first and it made it hot for us. But then like, you're waiting too long. Like, go away. another really cool one. Pictures of the real dog. Based off of the name Monaco, was actually a dog from one of the developers, if I remember right. is hidden in the manor, as well as pictures of the development team. So there's a hidden room with pictures of the development team and pictures of Monaco on there. The dog in the pictures is Monaco. There is a great meme reference in the Jestral Village, where like the Jestral Arena is, where Golgra is and stuff.
I think I know what you're gonna say.
There's a Jestral in a burning house, mimicking the meme. If you click on him, he does say, "Oh, this is fine." Referencing the dog in the burning building.
Yes, I thought that too when I saw it. I'm like, are they doing the meme? But then I was like, no way they're doing a fucking meme. I thought like later on you'd have to go back and somehow put the fires out.
I thought so too, but that wasn't one of those like white Jestral quests that you get.
Yeah.
Each character plays a different tune at the piano. So if you switch characters and go to the piano, you can play different tunes. So that's another interesting thing they put in the game I didn't know about until I read this. I was like, that's really cool, actually. Okay. And then I didn't see this one, but one that I saw talked about is Shrek's outhouse can actually be found on a rooftop in Lumiere during the prologue.
Oh. Really?
So, yeah, like a spitting image picture of Shrek's outhouse, apparently. Okay. You can kind of see it.
Cool if you like popped out of it or something.
That would be fucking wild, but like I actually haven't seen it. I just read about it on Reddit, but like that just sounds so cool.
It would feel like Verso had a sense of humor when he was doing things.
Yes, for sure. But yeah, that's what I got for some of the Easter eggs so far. There's plenty of others in this game. Like I said, there's more to find. And if you find other ones, put them in the comments. Let us know what you found.
Yeah, seriously. All right, well, let's jump into our last little segment here. Yes. Steven, what rating would you give this game?
Oh, it wasn't fucking blatantly obvious as fuck. It's it's definitely a 0.143. I don't know.
Yeah,
this is a 5 out of 5. Like, if I could give this a 6 out of 5, I would.
You technically can give it whatever the fuck you want. We made it. This is a million out of five. That's all.
This is a 10 out of 5. Honestly, this game, as soon as I started playing it, I realized how much I love this game and how much I realized that the people who made this game love video games and they know how to tell a story.
100%.
This is just some of the most beautiful story, music, gameplay I've seen and felt in such a long time. I haven't been excited like this about a video game in so long. And for a $50 AA game to hit this hard, that blew so many other games out of the water that I wasn't expecting. Like, this game looked interesting when I first saw the previews and stuff for it, but to actually play it, it changed a lot in what I thought about turn-based games. It changed a lot about what I thought about, like, just what this genre could bring. And turn-based games done like this is just miraculous in every way. What do you think?
Yeah, I got to agree. I think this game is definitely a 5 out of 5. There's nowhere else to put it in my book. And not only, like, Steven has a point here. It's a AA game. It's not released by fucking EA. It's not released by Bethesda. It's
not
it's
Ubisoft.
It's a game that had Kepler Interactive as their fucking funding partner. I don't know who Kepler Interactive is.
I don't either.
But I bet we're all going to know by the end of the year, apparently.
Fuck like, yeah.
They did such a good job in making a game and in a time where games feel like there's a drought.
Yes.
Like, we are in a game drought right now. No one wants to take chances. And these guys took a huge chance on making this, and it came out fucking perfect. So good job, Sandbox? No. Yeah, Sandbox.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Something like that. I can't remember. You said it earlier. Yeah,
I've got it on my thing. But
good
job.
Insert what Scott said correctly.
Yes. Seriously, like, that fucking, what you did worked so fucking well, it's not even funny.
I can't say it enough, and I hope that everyone actually goes out and tries this. It is on Game Pass for you to try for free if you have Game Pass, whether it's PC or Xbox Game Pass. It's worth the $50.
Sandfall.
It's worth the $50, honestly. Like, if you're wondering about like buying a game, like just trying it without like anything else, like if you listen to this podcast, you got this far, this sounds interesting to you at all, spend the $50. I guarantee you won't be disappointed. Like, it's so good.
Yeah, and you honestly, just the story alone is fucking worth its weight in gold.
Yes.
So
yeah,
definitely check it out, guys. This game's fucking amazing. But that's the episode.
Yes.
We have talked about it, and now we will tell you what our next episode is as soon as Steven says
I should figure that out.
I know what it is, but clearly he also knows what it is. It's just he's taking his time what I can't remember what it is, guys. I have no fucking idea.
Yes, our next episode is going to be a hot takes episode again, and it will be the questions of franchises that need to die and games we wish we could play for the first time again.
Yeah, I'm thinking like Clair Obscur probably needs to die.
Yeah, totally. I'm actually almost wanted to nominate it for games I wish I could play again for the first time already. Like,
yeah,
but all I won't. Right, well, I won't.
We're doing that next time, guys. So tune in for that one. We hope you enjoyed this one. Check us out on all platforms: Spotify, tell your friends and shit. You know, iTunes, Apple Podcast, TikTok, Instagram. We have everything. Reach out to us, soulofagamerpodcast@gmail.com. Tell us if you think the Gustav character looks more like
Jake Gyllenhaal or Robert Pattinson.
Sorry, I was gonna say Patrick something. I'm like, no, that's not right. It was
Patrick Bateman.
Yeah, tell me if it looks more like Patrick Starr or
Patrick Starr.
yeah, pretty much. Yeah, reach out, soulofagamerpodcast@gmail.com, and let us know what you think.
Thank you.
I love you.
Bye.
Bye.